Welcome to the Razor's Ink podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. A regularly occurring theme on the Razor's Ink podcast is underrated and overlooked. And in the case of the subject of today's podcast, both underrated and overlooked apply. So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, let's go have a swim. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
I want to speak about the film The Swimmer, starring Burt Lancaster, released by Columbia in 1968. See my podcast about 1968 and the movies. You'll never again see a collection of so many storied films released in the same year. It's about a man undergoing a midlife crisis and, in my opinion, on the verge of a nervous breakdown. I detest remakes, but The Swimmer deserves a remake because it speaks to the times we live in. Stick around because we're going to consider a remake with you playing the role of producer. It will be fun for some of you, but illustrative to others about the difficulty of imagining a movie when you have to put one together. Most of you hearing about a midlife crisis imagine an old guy buying the red sports car, which is too fast for him to drive safely. A midlife crisis isn't limited to men. Women go through a similar emotional and physical event called menopause. The midlife crisis generally manifests itself somewhere in the 50s. I argue 40 is the new 50. Those of you turning 40 may find it increasingly competitive to find a job, and those 50 or older find it impossible. We're a youth culture, and face it, companies can hire young people at lower pay, outsource jobs overseas, or in the years to come, replace us altogether with AI. We define ourselves by our job in addition to counting on the salary to survive. When our job disappears, we find ourselves swimming in despair, anxiety, and worry about the future. Add a family, and the midlife crisis is unimaginable. The midlife crisis, our protagonist, Ned, played by Burt Lancaster, is timelier today than its release in 1968. Midlife crisis is a national epidemic. Techies losing their cush jobs on a campus with dry cleaning and gourmet food. Career civil servants offered early retirement. Lawyers not making partner. Doctors burning out. Our blue-collar friends no longer cutting the mustard because of blown-out knees, back problems, poor eyesight, and a machine taking their place. Let's dissect The Swimmer before discussing our remake. The film was written and directed by Academy Award-nominated husband and wife team of Eleanor Perry, screenplay adaptation nomination, and Frank Perry, director nomination. The story is based on the 1964 short story The Swimmer by John Cheever. Burt Lancaster plays Ned Merrill, a fit and tanned New York former advertising executive living in a posh suburb in Connecticut.
Stu, did you pack? Don't tell me that's Ned Merrill down there.
Hi, honey bunch. Come on, join the party.
Half a minute.
God, Stu, I didn't realize how much I missed that ugly old mug of yours. Listen, why don't you get out of those clothes and we'll have one quick swim?
I'm not up to it. I'm beginning to feel my age.
Are you crazy? You're a year younger than I am.
Yeah. You were always pulling seniority on me at camp.
Remember how we used to take off our suits and swim for miles up that river? We just never got tired.
Yeah. We had nice new pink lungs in those days.
And the water up there. Remember? That transparent light green water. It felt different. God, what a beautiful feeling. We could have swum around the world in those days.
That was before we ever touched a drink or a cigarette.
Or a girl.
Or a girl.
That doesn't sap a man's strength.
Or I'd be in a wheelchair today.
We're introduced to Ned wearing only a bathing suit, which is the character's only wardrobe throughout the movie. A metaphor for losing even the shirt off his back. The movie doesn't give us much background information about Ned, except he lost his job as a big-shot advertising executive. His wife has left him, taking the children. Ned's been traumatized by the loss of his career wife and children. The film doesn't reveal the details except vague references to affairs. He drops by a pool party held by old friends, and he realizes there is a series of backyard swimming pools that could form a river back to his house, making it possible for him to swim his way home.
I could really do it.
Do what, Nettie?
Well, now at the Grahams, there's a string of pools that curves clear across the county to our house. Well, look, the Grahams, the Lears, the Bunkers, then over the ridge, then a portage through the Paston's riding ring to the Hallorans and the Gilmartins, then down Alewives Lane to the Biswangers, and then across Route 424 to the Recreation Center Pool, then up the hill and I'm home. Well, don't you see? I just figured it out. If I take a sort of a dog leg to the southwest, I can swim home.
Ned dives into the pool, emerging at the other end, and begins his journey. Ned's behavior perplexes his friends, but not this viewer. Ned is racing towards a reunion with his past, which no longer exists. As Ned travels home by way of pools, he encounters neighbors with pools of varying sizes and shapes, symbolizing the owner's personalities. If the neighbor isn't home, Ned will use the pool, and we meet neighbors who are judgmental, well-heeled people, intent on one-upsmanship, even if it means offering Ned a job in advertising, many career ladder steps below his pay grade, as if purposely degrading Ned.
Ned!
Danny boy.
Look, why don't you leave some phone numbers around? I've been trying to reach you. Look, I've heard of an opening. Sounds perfect for you, your experience. Smaller place than you're used to, but these two guys are creative as hell. Now, this firm has a reputation for originality. I think if you approach them right, take a cut just at first.
Take a cut?
Now, look here, Ned, you don't have to pretend with me.
Ned refuses an opportunity to get back up on his feet, so to speak. Why? You can't go home again, even if home is a job, because home doesn't exist anymore. He's not Dustin Hoffman's Kramer, a younger man begging for a copyright job to keep custody of a young son. It's over for Ned, and he knows it. With each dive into the pool, Ned's shedding his skin until he finally reaches the raw, pulsating core of what he has become, revealed at the conclusion of the film. Ned is emotionally vulnerable and has lost touch with reality. He meets a 20-year-old Julie, played by Janice Rule, who used to babysit his daughters.
It isn't Julianne Hooper.
Yes, it is.
Well, I can't believe it. You're all grown up. Well, how come we never see you anymore?
Well, I guess you don't need me anymore.
Well, of course we need you, Julie. We're always looking for a babysitter.
Oh, Mr. Merrill.
How about Sunday night? You busy?
No.
Okay, you're hired. You still live in the same place?
Yes.
I'll pick you up at 7.
You're putting me on.
No, I'm not.
A babysitter? Ellen and Maggie would have a fit if they heard you.
Julie agrees to join Ned, jumping from pool to pool. She's young, innocent, and seeking a good time, but innocently reveals she had a schoolgirl crush on Ned. Like a father, Julie confides in Ned about 2 sexual incidents at work, stoking Ned's paternal and sexual instincts. He talks about how he will protect her and making plans for the two of them. Julie is creeped out and runs away. Ned finds another pool and walks into a party where the hostess calls him a gatecrasher. He encounters a bubbly girl named Joan, played by Joan Rivers, in her film debut, who does not know him.
Some big deal, huh? Boy, you sure gotta like swimming to go in for this expenditure. You were about to type it. Goes in for swimming, huh?
Why not? When the world is so generously supplied with water.
Not a maniac about it. Tell you the truth, it's murder on my hair.
Lovely hair.
Thank you. You a neighbor from around here?
No.
You're a friend of the Biswangers?
They're not even in our Christmas card list.
Then what are you?
I'm an explorer.
No, I mean, what are you doing here?
I'm swimming home.
Joan is intrigued by Ned's directness, which is masking his emotional turmoil. Ned asks her to join him on his fantastical journey. She's happily rescued by a partygoer and ditches Ned. Being called a gatecrasher and ditched by a woman who briefly was attracted to him is a swift kick to his ego. Ned angrily jumps into the pool, causing a large splash and purposely getting the attention of the guests. When he emerges from the water, he notices a hot dog cart that used to be his.
This looks like my wagon. I'm sure this is my wagon. This is my wagon. I wheel my kids around in it, you see that? That's why Ellen put up with throwing. I mended it with plywood. This is my wagon, man.
Now, what's the trouble here?
This is my hot dog wagon.
Well, we bought it.
You bought it?
Yes, at a White Elephant sale.
Well, what the hell is it doing at a White Elephant sale?
Your wife must have donated it.
Well, she had no right to do that. She knows I'm crazy about this thing.
Take it up with her.
Listen, I'll buy it back from you.
Not interested.
I'll give you twice what you paid for it. I'll give you $100.
$100? For that piece of junk?
I want to buy this wagon back. Name a price and I'll send you a check.
You'll send me a check?
I'm taking this thing home with me.
Hands off you. You crashed in. Now crash the hell out.
A huge metaphor for Ned's life. Ned encounters a lonely boy named Kevin, played by Michael Kearney, a latchkey kid selling lemonade. The boy introduces Ned to the family pool, which is empty and abandoned. Another huge metaphor for the empty life dealt each of these guys. Ned urges the boy to imagine the empty pool filled with water and teaches Kevin basic swimming strokes.
I could get down there and make believe I'm swimming across the pool.
But that's kind of cheating, isn't it?
Well, not if I did all the strokes exactly as if I were doing them in the water.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Let's do it. Now, there are three things to remember. Relax. Reach. And follow through. That's it. Okay, let's start with the crawl. Hey, you got pretty good form.
The boy warms to this method and soon is swimming the length of the empty pool. It's a beautiful scene revealing Ned's paternal instincts, or perhaps Ned is relating to Kevin like another little boy. I tend to assume the latter. Ned shows up at the backyard pool of Shirley Abbott, played by Janice Rule, a stage actress with whom he had an affair several years earlier. Finally, we're given some explanation about why Ned's life imploded.
Now, what did you do that for?
Keep away from me, Ned, will you please?
You must be crazy. Everybody's gone crazy today. I just came from the Bizwangers. They snubbed me. Everybody at their party snubbed me. They've even got my hot dog wagon.
Your wagon?
I painted it myself and put the little umbrella up. I always kept it down in the playroom where the ping-pong table was, remember?
I've never been to your house, remember?
His warm memories of their time together contrast with Shirley's experience of being the other woman. It's a terrific scene because for a split second, we see an opportunity for Ned to make a human connection, but is rejected for a second time by a woman. It's a deep wound for Ned and visible on Lancaster's face. Ned trudges barefoot, wearing only swim trunks, alongside a busy highway, a strong metaphor for life passing him by. He reaches the final pool on his journey. We're no longer in the posh burbs with backyard pools, folks. We're at the public plunge with the butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers, all of whom had charge accounts with Ned, which are past due.
Just one lane. I want to swim just one length. You don't understand.
I understand you ain't got a half a buck. That's all I'm supposed to understand.
But can't you make an exception just this once? My house is right over there on the hill. I'll come straight back with the money.
Get the hell out of there, mister.
Will you lend me 50 cents? Please. Please.
Why the hell should I?
But I'll pay you back. Don't you realize I'll pay you back?
Beat it.
Howie.
Hi, Mr. Mel.
Oh, Howie, lend me 50 cents.
Don't you do it, Howie.
Howie, for Christ's sake.
What's 50 cents, more or less? I mean, considering...
Thanks, Howie. Thanks a lot, Chuck. Thanks an awful lot.
Ned's just another guy entreated demeaningly by the gatekeeper.
Hold it. Did you read, buddy? Take a shower. Go on back and wash those feet.
The local shop owners ask him, "How do you like our water?" Some of them make vicious comments about his wife and daughter. It's brutal, but we see how the other half seeks respite from the heat inside a crowded, over-chlorinated public pool. The skies darken and rain begins falling as a shivering and limping Ned staggers home. It's the end of his journey back home, but we find the tennis court where his daughters were supposedly playing in disrepair, and his house is locked and deserted, with several windows broken. Ned repeatedly tries to open the door before huddling down in the doorway in the rainstorm, assuming a fetal position. We're left to ponder Ned's fate. I ask, is it better to have tasted success and lost it, or to have never had it? One thing is for certain, as depicted in a Stop at Willoughby, episode 30 of The Twilight Zone, and the 1966 movie Second, starring Rock Hudson. See my podcast. Tom Wolfe said it best, you can't go home again, in the proverbial sense of the term. The Swimmer was produced by Sam Spiegel, a three-time Academy Award winner for Best Picture. Director Perry was fired by Spiegel after principal photography was completed. The producers brought in the young director, Sidney Pollack, Lancaster's friend and cinematographer Michael Nebbia, for January 1967 reshoots in California. Burt Lancaster had a fear of the water and took swimming lessons from former Olympian and water polo coach Bob Horn to prepare for the film. I assert this fear of the water was put to good use by Lancaster, as Ned always seemed ready to blow his gasket at any time. At the time of filming, Burt was 54 years old with a great physique, and his age made him ripe for the role because he could relate to Ned. Remember, Burt was a leading man, but a middle-aged man in Hollywood. According to Lancaster, when the film required an additional day of shooting, he paid $10,000 for it out of his own pocket. Burt Lancaster believed in the message of this movie, which is stronger today, more than 50 years later. The score was composed by a first-time composer, 24-year-old Marvin Hamlisch. Hamlisch got the job after Spiegel hired him to play the piano at one of his parties. Note to young aspiring filmmakers, take any job you can get and work like it's the last job you'll ever have. I want to compose a sequel in your honor, Ned, because you have become a symbol for many Americans experiencing your grief today. Imagine we're producers going to pitch a remake of The Swimmer. First, what's our budget? Let's assume an indie art house film made to win film festival awards, get a fat distribution deal, pay off our big star talent and behind-the-scenes professionals. Say, less than $10 million. Second, who will play the swimmer? The bigger the name, the better our chances of getting a green light. Third, where do we shoot? We need pools, lots of them. Fourth, who will direct? A named director will capture the pathos, squeeze every penny out of each frame of film stock, and get us the green light. Fifth, who will write the screenplay, maintaining the original midlife crisis themes, but making them relatable to today's audiences? Sixth, music score sets the tone. Licensing music is less expensive than orchestrating original music. So, what's your pitch? You get 5 minutes in front of the studio, and remember, you're swimming inside a pool of sharks in the backyard called Hollywood. There's no right or wrong answer. This is an exercise. If it were real life, there would be millions of dollars at stake, as well as your career prospects. Here's my take. I see a low-budget art house film. I'll take $10 million, but budget $5 million. My director is fashion icon and film director of A Single Man and Nocturnal Animals, Tom Ford. Why, Tom? Stay tuned. I'll pitch Keanu Reeves and Brad Pitt, who will respect a Lancaster film and are at the right age and have good physiques. They're both capable of portraying the agony and pathos of the protagonist. Neither need the money, but want the Best Actor Oscar, and a juicy character not requiring any significant supporting cast. It's their movie. I'll offer them a first dollar gross deal in lieu of a big salary. First dollar gross means they get a percentage of literally the first dollar and every subsequent dollar earned on the film. First dollar gross has made the biggest stars in Hollywood multimillionaires. I'll close one or both of them when I get Tom Ford to sign on as director, I'm certain. I'll shoot the film in Palm Springs, which is dotted with beautiful mid-century modern homes and golf clubs. Palm Springs has a significant gay population, which have restored Palm Springs to a pristine oasis. The exterior design and interiors will be exquisite, and watching Ned leap from pool to pool against the backdrop of the setting sun against those desert hills will be beautiful. Tom Ford will get me. I'm writing the screenplay. Here's the story. Ned has been fired from his Hollywood studio C-suite job, served with divorce and custody papers, and flees to his family's second home in Palm Springs, only about 90 minutes away. Ned's son and daughter are in college and won't speak to him, having been ravaged by their mother's scorn, blaming Ned for the divorce. Why the calamity in Ned's life? Let's ask his wife. Frankly, I'll turn to a good casting director for this role. It's not a big role requiring expensive talent, but if I land Ford, Reeves, or Pitt, I'll get big talent for a small role. Here's a teaser.
Losing your job was the last straw, Ned. I won't tolerate you sneaking about with the pool boy, valet, or good-looking young aspiring leading man any longer. This divorce will allow us both to become honest with ourselves. You were always a good father, provider, and I loved you once. I won't go on loving a lie.
Ned returns to his Palm Springs home, which has been cleaned out and put on the market for sale. He breaks in and takes up residence. Ned begins his journey from pool to pool, meeting many old friends. Some are kind, and many have turned their back. Ned's journey has led him eastward through the posh desert communities of Palm Springs, Rancho Mirage, La Quinta, and finally into a beat-up mobile home park inside Indio, California, where he meets up with an acquaintance who worked behind the camera as a stagehand. We suspect they had a hookup one time long ago, but a bond existed between two men, and Ned's acquaintance takes him in, saying, "Oh, buddy, we can't go home again, but sure as hell, we'll wake to a new day tomorrow. We'll start figuring it all out then. Put those tired raw dogs inside the plastic pool while I fetch us some cold cervezas. It'll be a hell of a sunset." Roll credits. Some of you might be saying, this guy is crazy. He'd never get it made. There have been a slew of films which were born from scribbles on a cocktail napkin. Read about Mario Puzo pitching Robert Evans, The Godfather. Here's the takeaway from the podcast. You know what's crazy? Not dreaming. Because time will fly regardless, so why not dream your dreams, take your shots, and suffer the slings and arrows, as Hamlet aptly put it. Most of all, don't let age stand in your way. You're smarter, wiser, and stronger than you think. Go for it. Burt Lancaster didn't need the money or fame when he made The Swimmer. You might say it was a risky film, but he knew time was passing him by, and he was determined to remain relevant. See him in the 1980 Atlantic City. Until I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint, and class is dismissed.
And to see this 1968 Greek tragedy, one need only go to YouTube, where you'll find the entire movie online for free. You're welcome. You've been listening to the Razor's Ink podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. Also, look for Jonathan's short story, Sales Made of Cash, recently included in the poetry and short story book, The Moment, put out by Scars Publications. The Moment is now available in paperback at Amazon. Or drop an email to RazorsIncPodcast@gmail.com.